Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to gore, sexual content, animal cruelty, human suffering, mental conditions, death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
Howdy, kids! It's Sheriff Westmark to remind you, don't sleep with your siblings! I'm Sean.
Thank you, Pan-Pan, for giving us many, many, many more pandas. I'm Adam.
We're gonna need another litter of puppies. Quick, someone get the sex table. I'm Andy.
Does the cute person in the checkout line look a little too familiar? Careful, that might be GSA. I'm Kelly, and this is Acid Pop. Hello everyone, this is Acid Pop, and today we're going to be talking about inbreeding, and a related topic, selective breeding.
Ooh, the image you sent me says puppy leaks. I thought it was puppies.
You'll get to see some puppies. Let's get straight into it with the etymology. Breed comes from West German brogen.
Huh. Sexy.
Which means to brood or hatch.
I wish we'd stuck with brood.
And that goes back further to the Proto-Indo-European beru, which means to boil, bubble, or burn.
Or toil and trouble.
Yeah. Sounds like an anime character where the character is a giant bear. Oh, it's beru!
Hey, it's boiling up one of them babies in your belly.
Yeah, I found it kind of interesting that we go from breed to boil, but it still has that sort of...
Yeah, and then we went back to bun in the oven.
You're right.
Which are obviously boiled.
It's all about the cooking analogies.
Now, incest comes from Latin incestus.
Okay.
In meaning not, which is different what the in inbreeding means, and cestus meaning pure. So
not pure.
Not pure.
Interesting.
I would agree with that. You know, every time there's an etymology of a Latin word and it ends with us, I always just think of the stereotypical Wile E. Coyote cartoon. And it's just like, Latin can't be that simple, but it very often is that simple.
The Old English also had a word for incest. It was sibleger, which meant kin lying.
I thought it was going to be bleh.
Now, there is incestophobia, but that's not a very interesting one. So there's also syngenesophobia, which is fear of relatives.
Huh. Wait, hold on, though. What is incestophobia?
Fear of incest.
Okay.
Wait, afraid
your sister's going to come in and sleep with you?
I'm sure it has multiple manifestations, but yes, fear of having sex with a relative.
Huh. I feel like that I've got that one pretty well on lock. Like, that's not going to sneak up on me anytime soon.
Well, we'll talk about that. Oh. Happens accidentally more often than you'd think. So let's get to the pop quiz. Adam?
Yes?
We're counting on you here because we're getting into genetics.
Because you slept with your cousin that one time.
So, if first cousins have children, they are not at an increased risk of genetic disorders. True or false?
First cousin. I'm going to say false. I think they are at risk.
I believe they would be at risk. We didn't really cover kissing cousins in my genetics class.
See, I know this is false, but the increase is so small, I wonder if it even counts. But I'm still going to go with false.
So you are all correct. It is false, but as Sean points out, not by much. Having a child with your first cousin increases the risk of genetic disorders by 2-3%.
Yeah.
So feel free.
At the same time, that's also about double the risk, as the base risk is 2-3%.
Mm.
So your risk can go from 3% to 6%.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, that's kind of a big jump, because that's like 1 in 50 to 1 in 25.
The danger comes from both parents carrying the same damaged recessive gene, and you share about 12.5% of your genes with your first cousin.
Oh, just like my first cousin, damaged recessive gene.
It's a very unfortunate nickname.
Just don't breed with them.
Good advice.
Not with a name like that.
The risk of someone who is a carrier for total colorblindness having a child with total colorblindness is 1 in 800. But if they have a child with their sibling, the risk is 1 in 16. True or false?
Oh, okay. That was a long one.
There's a lot of math in this. You guys are going to have fun.
Let me review my notes. I think that's false.
If two siblings are running at each other naked at 60 miles per hour.
I'm going to say true, but the math is muddling me.
It is true.
No.
The siblings have a 1 in 4 chance of having the same recessive gene.
Wow.
Because of that Punnett square.
Cousins aren't that dangerous, as we established, but having a child with your sibling is significantly worse.
Yeah.
I would assume. It kills your social life.
Somewhere in around 1 in 20,000 people are totally colorblind, but there's an island in the Pacific where the rate is 1 in 5.
Wow.
The population was founded by a handful of typhoon survivors, so the genetic diversity was a bit limited.
A handful of typhoon siblings.
Nice gray shirt there, Jerry. Yeah, I like yours too.
As a result of selective breeding, we've created animals that can no longer mate or give birth without assistance.
True.
Yeah, I'm going to say true.
Definitely true.
It is absolutely true. There are also animals that are fertile, but can't do any of it on their own. We'll get into that a bit later. Inbreeding is always bad from a genetic perspective.
False.
I
feel like this is leading. Let's say false.
I don't think it's like 100% bad all the time, but it's at high risk for bad.
Depends on your morals, I guess.
Let's put this away a different way. Inbreeding can sometimes be beneficial.
Yeah.
I would say that's true. I guess.
That is, in fact, well, the second one's true, the first one's false. There's some evidence that more distant inbreeding, such as third cousins, may lead to couples having more and healthier children.
Huh.
What? No one knows why.
That's interesting. Does that count as inbreeding, though, once it's your third cousin?
Well,
it's degrees.
It's still a relative.
I guess.
There's still an inbreeding coefficient there.
I mean, when you break it all down, it's all inbreeding at some point.
All right, we're on to the short answer. How similar is the human genome to a chimp's?
Not very similar, I don't think.
92%.
It is 97%. We're very similar.
I don't really have any prior knowledge to base this off of. I'm going to go 62.
Andy is the closest without going over.
Oh.
99%.
Damn it.
So close.
Humans are 99.9% similar to each other.
Yeah.
So even without inbreeding, we all have a lot in common.
Yeah. That's why I maybe question the third cousin thing. It's just like, well, you're already starting at like almost, you know, 100% the same anyway.
Who's closer genetically? First cousins or an uncle and their niece?
I'm going to say the niece.
I'm going to go with first cousins and I'll tell you why.
You don't have much in common with your uncle?
Well, no, you do. It's just, I think that they'd probably be...
I'm going to say the uncle and the niece because the uncle is closer to, like, your parent, like, genetically.
Yeah, that's Adam, that's what I was trying to put into words.
You guess the opposite.
I don't know. Well, Sean.
Well, Andy may or may not be correct because it is uncle and niece. They
you did
share
it, maybe, Andy.
25% of their genetics, if there's no previous inbreeding, and that gets important later.
If.
That's a big asterisk.
Cousins, as we've established, are 12.5%. Now, uncle-niece and aunt-nephew marriages are one of the most common types you see in royal intermarriage where they're sticking to the family bloodline. And this is genetically close enough that it becomes a problem pretty fast.
So if you have a choice between marrying your uncle or your cousin, go with the cousin.
If you really had to choose.
Who is Pan Pan?
I feel like some sort of panda mascot.
So that's the alternate universe Peter Pan.
No, this is the gigantic strongman that was inbred and he carries around two pans and smashes people at the carnival.
Oh, God.
Clang, clang, Pan Pan!
He's here!
Adam, you more or less got it.
What?
It's a panda?
I'm Pan Pan, the inbreeding panda.
Don't inbreed. Third cousins only.
So, It's not a mascot. It's an actual panda. This is early in the panda breeding program when they were still having a lot of problems getting pandas to breed. And they were still mostly dealing with wild caught pandas and trying to restart the population.
Turns out they're only attracted to their siblings.
And Pan Pan was a panda who was really good at sex.
Wow.
For a panda.
This panda has all the right moves.
So he was really.
Is that a boy panda or a girl panda?
He was a boy panda.
He just mastered raising one eyebrow.
He was pretty much the first panda they could get to initiate intercourse without encouragement. He'd just see a lady and go for it.
Times mirrors.
A very randy panda.
So there are currently 530 pandas who are captive bred.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that we're children of Pan Pan.
Well, 130 of them are related to Pan Pan.
Oh, God. That's a really big chunk, Pan Pan.
He had over 30 cubs.
He's the Genghis Khan of pandas.
Which is significantly ahead of the next panda on the list. So he's number one there with a bullet.
Yeah, I haven't had any panda cubs.
Yeah, nobody even remembers the second on the list.
So this is great, except for the whole inbreeding thing.
Yeah.
The top 10 founding pandas of the current 530 panda breeding population.
You know, the pandas that signed the panda constitution.
So the top 10 make up 50% of the current captive gene pool. It's a bit of a problem. And there are more than 50 founding pandas. It's just those 10 were the only ones that were any good at getting the babies going. On to terms. What is a Habsburg jaw?
Is that where inbreeding means like they have less of a chin?
Oh, man, that's what I was going to guess. That's where you have more of a chin.
I was about to say, Habsburg sounds like iceberg, so it's a chin so big it could sink the unsinkable ship.
It is indeed a jutting lower jaw.
Oh,
so
I got it.
What?
Was a common trait in the Habsburg royal family, which controlled much of Europe in the 16th and 17th century.
Lord Underbite.
Because of inbreeding, the trait became more and more prominent and common, and in extreme cases, which we'll discuss later, it could inhibit the ability to speak or chew.
This is actually the family that invented the chin strap. It was just to hold their jaw up.
Between 1516 and 1700, 80% of marriages among the Habsburgs were between close relatives.
Oh.
Mm.
This is how you get one family to control most of Europe. You don't let them have sex with anyone outside that one family.
You don't let them in.
As a result, infant mortality among the Habsburg royals hit 50%.
Well, you can't fit those chins out.
And we'll discuss Charles II, one of the most famously inbred Habsburgs, in a bit. What is a double first cousin?
Double first cousin.
That's a first cousin that's a Siamese twin. Conjoined
twin.
That's not
bad.
That's good. Okay, I know. So you've got a parent, right? That parent has two siblings. They have sex with each other, and that makes your cousin, but it's a cousin twice because it's from an aunt and an uncle.
I like that. I think I was trying to form it out in my head, but I think that's where I was going to end up. Let's go with that.
That is correct.
Yeah.
It's not the way it generally happens.
Oh, okay.
It's also, you'd end up with the
Cut
same
some
thing.
Slack. He's new at this.
When you have two brothers and two sisters.
Uh-huh.
So a pair of brothers and a pair of sisters who aren't related to each other. And each brother marries.
Wait.
Two.
Oh, they're not one family.
Yeah.
I see. So you've
there's John Smith one and Joe Smith. And then there's Sarah
Williams
and Katie Williams.
Got it.
I don't know why they named him John Smith one.
And the Smiths marry the Williamses.
Uh-huh.
Their children are double first cousins.
Ah, okay. That's less creepy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But the other one does happen. We'll get into that.
That one's first cousins cubed.
The hyper cousin.
So double first cousins and other double relatives were common in royal families because of the limited gene pool. Double first cousins share 25% of their DNA, same as a half sibling or an uncle and a niece.
I like to imagine that you get like a royal scorecard where there's just like double cousin, triple chin, and just like, okay, so for this next run, you've got to have sex with you, and then we'll see what comes out.
It's incest bingo.
Yeah.
What is the Westermark effect?
That is, there's more inbreeding the further west you go. Mark it on the map.
Doesn't say anything good for all of us.
Yeah.
How inbreeding produces weaker offspring eventually.
That was the famous Sheriff Mark from the Old West who married three of his cousins simultaneously.
One of the first, a second, and a third cousin.
One of the most famous Mormons there is.
Half a point for Adam for making an effort to get an actual answer.
Yay! Seriousness.
The Westermarck effect is the lack of sexual attraction between children raised together. So most notably,
that's a good thing.
Siblings don't tend to be sexually attracted to each other, but you also see these in kids who aren't blood related but are raised in the same household. They think the formative age for this is between 0 and 6.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You guys seen Ponyo?
Yes.
I worry about that.
Gonna grow up too much like brother and sister.
Yeah.
This is interesting because there's a couple cultures, or were a couple cultures, where they had a form of arranged marriage where the girl would go live with the boy's family, but as pretty much an infant.
Huh.
And they would be raised together, and she would be raised as a daughter of the household. And the marriages between these children who had this particular type of arranged marriages went very poorly.
Yeah.
There was lots of divorces, lots of cheating, lots of just people flat out refusing to get married because they saw each other as siblings, and this effect couldn't be overcome.
Yeah. Trying to fight biology.
What is GSA? What does it stand for?
GSA.
It is...
So that's when you sleep with your cousin and it's genetically safe incest.
That'd be ancest.
What? Oh, hey. So
genetically shocking adults. They have very shocking genes.
Great sibling ass. Always.
Great sibling ass. It overcame the Westermarck effect.
Great sibling ass might be closest.
No fair. He had two answers.
This is genetic sexual attraction.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
And it is sort of the opposite of the Westermarck effect, or the thing that the Westermarck effect thankfully prevents.
Yeah, most of the time. How often does that come up?
Well, it's theorized that closely related people who aren't raised together tend to develop an intense sexual attraction. This hasn't been deeply studied, but there have been cases of siblings separated at birth, meeting, and marrying when adults.
When they shouldn't.
When you really shouldn't. So remember, kids, if you're intensely sexually attracted to somebody.
More commonly these days, it's sperm donors.
So
there's certain prolific and popular sperm donors. And
like Pan Pan.
Like Pan Pan. And when these kids who have no idea and no reason to know that they're related to each other meet, there's a unusually high chance that they'll be attracted to each other and like instantly click.
Oh, weird. So it works like even if it's just the dad and like you have two separate moms?
Yes, because there's still a genetic link.
Wow, that's weird.
Dude, that girl just looks just like you, but hot. Oh, I know.
More ickily, there are cases of kids being given up for adoption and then seeking a parent as an adult and getting into a relationship with that parent.
Ah! Well, I don't know about that, but it's still pretty early in the year, but I'm going to vote for ickily as word of the year.
Okay, so there is a little bit of science here. People tend to be...
I don't know if I want to know.
People tend to be attracted to people who look like themselves.
Do they?
Narcissists.
In one study, people were shown pictures of strangers, as well as pictures of strangers whose picture had been morphed with a picture of the person doing the looking.
Oh, okay.
But it was bad. It was like the Animorphs covers.
This is what it would look like halfway transformed to you.
People rated the morphed picture as more attractive.
Huh.
Huh.
Interesting.
In other words, the more the stranger looked like the person doing the judging, the more that person found that stranger attractive.
Huh.
All right, let's move on to some stories now that I've creeped everyone out.
Okay.
I don't have any stories on this.
can't somebody have any personal experience stories there?
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that from all of you. We're going to start by discussing animals and the horrible things that humans do to them. We really like strong, distinctive features in our animals. And over the years, we just like to make them stronger and more distinctive.
Yeah.
And one great example of that is bulldogs.
Yeah.
Oh, the precious boys.
So we're going to get them out of the way first because they're Like, if you ask a vet which purebred animal is the most depressing, they'll say bulldogs.
Yeah.
You think so? I thought pugs would be up there.
They're up there, but they're not as bad as the bully breeds. So bulldogs are walking tragedies that shouldn't exist. Yeah. And it's all our fault.
I didn't do anything.
All humanity's fault. How's that?
they can't be that sad. They walk around trying to breathe all day.
They want
to live. They're dislocating hips and their eyeballs falling out.
And this goes for all bulldogs, English, American, and French. All of them have these problems, although they also each have their own unique set of problems.
What if you mix them all together?
My American bulldog won't stop listening to Larry the Cable Guy.
And just to make sure that all our bulldog-loving listeners don't get mad at me, bulldogs are sweet dogs. Like, don't get me wrong. They're very cute. They're very sweet. I hope you enjoy the medical bills.
Yeah. It's hard to be aggressive when you can't breathe.
There's no way around the fact that our love for scrunch faces and wrinkles have created animals that are unhealthy, prone to extremely painful medical conditions, and literally couldn't exist at this point without human interference. So, yes, these are the ones that cannot mate on their own. And cannot give birth.
And I mean, I don't know a lot about breed offhand, but I would assume that bulldogs came about as like they were trying to serve some sort of purpose with the body shape.
Oh, yeah. They used to be working dogs.
What did they do? Because I thought the only thing that bulldogs were ever good at back when they weren't so pathetic was being in dog fights, because they were so wrinkly that you couldn't really get a piece of them and they could bite pretty dang hard.
That makes sense.
Before we even had them for that, before we mutated them that horribly, they were working dogs. And big, strong, healthy working dogs.
Yeah.
So I have a picture we'll link to that shows the changes in bulldog skulls between 1890 and 1935. And I'd like you two to take a look at it. Andy, you should have it.
Okay, yeah. And I just looked it up, Sean. It wasn't for dog fights. It was for bull fights.
Oh, wow.
They used to take down bulls.
Wow. I guess that makes sense.
Somebody took his nose and never gave it back.
He looks a lot happier.
So does anyone want to describe these two skulls for me?
Well, one of them looks like a regular sort of canine skull. And the other one looks like whatever animal had it used to have a trunk. Like the nose bones are just missing. And it looks like the place where the brain would be got shrunk too.
Yeah, well, it kind of looks like somebody took the nose and went no and pushed it in, like
pass it on.
And that's 1935. We have continued to destroy them since then.
Westminster has to be stopped.
Inbreeding is a huge problem with these breeds. English bulldogs can be traced back to just 65 individuals from 1835.
Ouch.
And it's not a case where we're carefully shepherding the genetic diversity and making sure that each generation we have more and more genetic diversity. No, we like certain looks in certain animals, and those ones become the star breeders, and then the next generation becomes even more inbred because of the pan-pan effect.
Inbreeding, the next generation.
Health problems in bulldogs include everything.
Yeah. I wonder what, when people are going to breed bulldogs, I wonder what they look for, you know? It's just like, they're just such a mess. It's like, how do you distinguish one from the other? It's like, oh yeah, that one's a winner right there.
That one's eyes didn't come out randomly, so get him on the run.
Specific problems include, as we know, they can't breathe well due to the shape of their face. Their wrinkles cause skin infections. They have eye issues. They have heart issues. They overheat extremely easily. They have the highest rate of hip dysplasia of any dog breed. Their average lifespan is only 9 years.
Ooh.
On the mating inability, they have these huge, heavy upper bodies and these weak little back legs. So mounting a female just kind of collapses her.
He gets on top and both her hips dislocate.
Yeah, and they also hyperventilate and overheat constantly.
It's just a mess.
Put in a fridge.
They actually have these mating tables for them, which they use some of the time, which supports the female.
Don't let the children eat on that table.
And then they have these giant heads that don't fit through the birth canal, so 95% of bulldogs are delivered by C-section.
No, I'm sad about bulldogs.
They're not the only terrible dogs, just to be fair. You know, pugs' eyes can fall out. Yorkies are prone to tracheal collapse. Dalmatians are often deaf.
Andy's dog farts on him.
Pomeranians have too many teeth. But we've just pushed bulldogs a little too far.
A litter too far?
Yes.
I get it.
Save that for the intro.
For a little positivity here, the sad part of this, Sean, earlier you were talking about how they make these decisions. Well, the problem is these are breed standards for dog shows.
Yeah.
But some shows are changing the rules to favor healthy animals.
That's good.
So
yeah,
the
that
British
seems beneficial.
The British Kennel Club introduced new rules and standards in 2009, rewarding health and docking points for unhealthy traits. So, for example, bulldogs, previously, the breed standard was extremely short face and underbite. It's been changed to relatively short face. And bulldogs now get marked down for being bow-legged, which used to be a positive trait. The American Kennel Club said, screw you, we like bulldogs the way they are. We're not going to change our breed standards.
So we put them on a treadmill, and if they pass out in under a minute, they get extra points.
Yeah, purebreds. Sad.
What you gonna do with them?
Stop making more! So now we're gonna talk a little bit about horses.
Oh, man.
Racehorses. They need two things. They need four of those.
Oh.
They need to be as fast as possible. So they need to be muscular, but they also need to be light. And unfortunately, we've achieved the second mostly by decreasing the strength of their bones.
Yeah. Oh, so no.
We bred them with birds for a few generations.
I was going to say, they've been selectively breeding them with birds.
Racehorses are kind of like a glass cannon in a video game. They go really fast, and they often break themselves just by running.
Yeah. Oh.
For example, the racehorse Eight Bells, a three-year-old filly, placed second in the Kentucky Derby in 2011. Immediately afterwards, she was euthanized as she fractured both her forelegs trying to stop after finishing the race.
Oh, no.
Now, nothing happened. She didn't trip. Another horse didn't run into her. Yeah. She was just trying to stop her own momentum, and her legs were so brittle they snapped.
Ugh. Just hit the brakes, and all of a sudden she was shorter.
So this is what we do to people who don't come in first.
I mean, if we keep breeding these horses with hollow bones, eventually we could get a Pegasus.
And this was only 2 years after another Derby winner was put down after he fractured his leg in a non-Derby race. 80% of modern racehorse genetics can be traced back to 21 18th century horses.
Wow. This is getting worse.
And inbreeding has only been increasing since the 1990s.
Wow.
So for a recent example of a selectively bred horse that caused a bit of a stir, there was an Arabian horse named El Rey Magnum. Arabian horses are known for this dished face where their nose sort of goes down.
Oh, it's great for keeping your phone in there when you're riding a horse.
Which allows them to take in a lot of oxygen and is supposed to, I think, like filter out dust or something. But taken too far, it sort of collapses the nose canal and makes it hard for them to breathe. And we have a picture of this horse, if you want to take a look.
Oh.
Whoa.
It looks like a cartoon.
Yeah. It's like if you had like a like one of those rubber ducks that you squeeze to make a honking noise, and you like squeezed it halfway.
Now, horses can't breathe through their mouths, so it's especially a concern if you collapse the area down their nose canal.
Sure. Yeah, the only way air can get in. Kind of a big deal.
Oh, I thought they had blowholes.
I was going to say, so we started breeding these with dolphins.
Yeah, but then where's the rider going to sit?
He'll slip right off, Sean.
Now, in this horse's defense, the veterinarian who works for the breeder says that it's perfectly healthy and they think it's going to be a champion.
He said as he was putting piles of money in his pocket.
There was some sort of snickering noise, but he said he just coughed.
Yeah, the horse is completely healthy. I stuck some slinkies in there. That'll probably keep it from collapsing more.
I just imagine you can hear this thing inhale from like 500 feet away.
Yeah, with a collapsed thing, it sounds like a train whistle.
He needs a new name. So we've talked about the horrible things that humanity has done to animals. Let's talk a little
bit about what animals have done to us.
Horses have sex with each other.
Let's talk about the horrible things that humanity has done to themselves.
Serves them right, I guess.
We can't say we didn't have it coming.
So as I mentioned, we're focusing mostly on royalty here. The sort of selective breeding that happens in powerful families that want to be the Habsburgs and control all of Europe. So we're going to go chronologically, and we're going to start with the Egyptians.
Oh, yeah.
The Egyptians are rather unique on the inbreeding front in that sibling marriage was really common.
Wow.
And it isn't common in any other culture's inbreeding.
Oh, Dad, I don't want to marry my sister.
Now, some people trace this back to mythology and say the goddess Isis married Osiris, and so the...
So you can too.
So the royal family sort of kept that going. But I mean, gods are marrying their siblings in just about every culture's mythology. So I'm not sure I buy it.
Except for Jesus.
It's just an excuse.
But part of this is, you know, the pharaoh was considered to be descended directly from the gods. So you don't want to dilute that bloodline.
Well, no.
I don't know. I think I'd be pretty happy if I were half god.
Even like an eighth god, I think that's still a pretty good deal.
Look at all these demigods running around. You guys are chumps.
And this marrying led to another type of doubling, which is the marriage of a double niece, which is when a man marries the child of his brother and his sister, who are also married.
Oh. It's just stacking your multipliers.
You've gone too far.
And the child had 57 teeth, but none of them were in its mouth.
Did somebody ever call Child Protective Services on Egypt?
So we see this in King Tut. King Tut was the child of siblings and was married to his own half-sibling. His wife had two stillborn daughters. He had a degenerative bone disease, a cleft palate, and a curved spine. He walked with a cane and died at 19, likely from a result of his many illnesses. He was the
heart three sizes too small.
And he was the last of his line, which is a pretty common end result of too much inbreeding.
Yeah, probably for the best.
And when they put him in the casket, you could hear them going, tut, tut, tut.
He had to have a casket in the shape of the letter C.
He rolled around the Egyptian deserts.
So now we're going to talk about Charles II, who is one of our Habsburgs.
Finally.
Also known as Charles the Bewitched, and he was the last Habsburg king of Spain.
The Bewitched? That's a pretty cool name, though.
That is a cool name.
Well, just wait till he got it. Maybe you can try, too. As discussed, the Habsburgs were super into inbreeding, and Charles II, like King Tut before him, was so inbred that he was the end of the Habsburg genetic line in Spain. He was the son of an uncle-niece marriage, but his parents were so inbred, they were as genetically close as full siblings.
Wow.
With his pronounced Habsburg jaw, he could barely chew, and with his overlarge tongue, he could barely speak. He had a heart defect and was considered so delicate in health that he was treated essentially like an infant until the age of 10.
I thought you were just going to keep the pattern going. So he had a heart defect so he could barely love.
Now, a lot of the material I encountered said that he was...
gross looking.
Mentally delayed. But this is kind of hard to be sure of because they treated him like he was an infant until the age of 10 and he was unable to communicate for much of his life. He actually had a brother at one point who took interest in his education and he immediately started to show improvement. But he was a bit odd. At one point, he demanded that the bodies of his parents be dug up so that he could view them.
He used his gigantic jaw to do it.
Let's take a look at this gentleman. That's
face.
The third image I sent you.
Whoa.
He's making kissy lips.
See, he's just the 17th century doctor.
That is quite the chin.
And keep in mind, you know, this is a royal portrait. They're as flattering as they can be.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God. It was worse than this.
He's got a built-in bib.
So he wasn't allowed to pursue higher learning because it was considered to be too taxing, though he did eventually learn to read and write. His half-brothers mostly ran his kingdom, and he did marry, but he died childless at 39.
Well, that's a pretty good run.
In his autopsy, the doctor described his body as follows. I feel like there might have been some poetic license here. His body did not contain a single drop of blood. His heart was the size of a peppercorn. His lungs corroded. His intestines rotten and gangrenous. He had a single testicle, black as coal, and his head and his head was full of water.
If you're naughty, Santa's going to give you King Charles II in your stocking.
Are we sure this guy was a doctor?
Yeah, this coroner was owed money by the king. Or this is the first ever robot.
A bloodless peppercorn man. Testicles as black as night.
So lastly, we're going to hit on Queen Victoria and kind of talk about how quickly inbreeding can cause a problem if there's a serious genetic anomaly. So Queen Victoria, we all know her, Victorian ages, 1900s.
Yeah, she had a hell of a run.
Hell of a run. She was married to her first cousin, Prince Albert.
Yeah.
And she is the reason why hemophilia is called the royal disease.
Huh.
Now, there is a lot of inbreeding in her lineage, but hemophilia wasn't in her lineage until her. They think it was a spontaneous genetic mutation.
It happens.
So she had 8 children.
Wow.
And a unique approach to world peace. She assumed that if everyone in Europe was related, they wouldn't fight so much. For this reason,
interesting.
You too. Yes, yes.
So she married her children into just about every royal family in Europe and gained the name the Grandmother of Europe. But they all sort of hated each other, the grandchildren. So people feel like that might have made World War I worse because there was so much bad blood.
I get it.
For example, one of her daughter's children led Germany during World War I. And his mother was always talking about how much better England was than Germany.
Number one! Woo!
So he may have had a bit of a chip on his shoulder when he tried to destroy it. Now, hemophilia.
Mm-hmm.
Of Victoria's children, one of her children, 3 of her grandchildren, and 6 of her great-grandchildren had hemophilia.
Wow.
And part of this is like 2 of her daughters were carriers.
Yeah.
And then their kids married.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. That's all it takes.
did we go over what hemophilia is?
That's when you cut yourself and you don't basically have any...
don't have the clotting factor.
Yeah. You just keep bleeding.
Yeah, so you could die from a paper cut.
So let's talk a little bit about how her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren died.
Was it blood related?
All of them?
Her son Leopold, which was the one of her children...
Leopold.
Had hemophilia, died at 31 after falling down some stairs and having a cerebral hemorrhage. Her grandson Frederick died of a hemorrhage after falling out of a window at the age of 3.
I think there was going to be more problems if you're just letting your kids fall out windows.
Yeah, the family's also very clumsy. Did we mention that?
Her grandson Prince Waldemar died when he couldn't get a blood transfusion because of the war. And his brother died at the age of 4 when he fell out of a chair due to an epileptic seizure.
Okay, I was going to say, they are just falling off of everything, aren't they?
And these children were the children of first cousins. And we all know about Alexis, the little son of Tsar Nicholas and Empress Alexandria, and Rasputin, who was brought in to try and treat his hemophilia, which may or may not have led to the Russian Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Another of her grandkids married into the Spanish royal family, spreading hemophilia there. Those 2 children with hemophilia were dressed in padded suits to protect them.
The bubble children of their time.
This is why all royal children now run around in hamster balls.
All right, so that's the last of our stories. I understand that you probably don't have any stories about having sex with your siblings, but any other inbreeding related stories?
The only thing I could say is one day I felt like I was on Reddit, as you do, and apparently there's a subreddit for incest.
Yeah.
I'm sure there is.
And in my morbid curiosity, I clicked it, and it's just pages and pages of people going, how do I fuck my sister? Like, come on.
How do I do this?
Yeah. I don't know.
And I immediately went, oh no.
Where is that Westermark effect when you need it?
Yeah. I try very hard to have an open mind and understand that I have opinions about things and those opinions aren't fact, even though the fact that, like, if you do have kids with your siblings, it tends to go very poorly. But, like, in my own personal opinion, like, if you want to have a relationship with someone you're related to and they want to have a relationship with you, and you both agree to not have kids, then I guess you're okay. And I'll try to respect your decision. But it's a tough one.
Consenting, I guess that's their call.
Yeah.
And that's where the complications of, like, these children of sperm donors who've gotten married comes in.
Yeah.
It's incest within a, like, nuclear family. You get into weird power dynamics and, like, was there abuse, etc.
Right.
But when they've never met before and they have no reason to know they're related, it becomes this whole other thing. Like, if... You suddenly learned that your wife or girlfriend was your sister? I mean, what would you do?
Yeah.
Be kind of grossed out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're like, well, there's no way I could have known this.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a tricky situation.
Ah, c'est la vie.
All right. So I had a lot of trouble coming up with a what are your morals worth question.
I don't know if there's going to be a good enough amount here.
Well, I can't even participate.
We're not going to ask about breeding with relatives. I think none of us have a number where that's okay.
Nope.
But I am going to ask how much I'd have to pay you for you to climb into a padded suit and live with hemophilia for a year.
Oh, no.
Ooh. See, I've got a problem. Just the other day, I was opening a wine bottle and got my hand caught in the little gears on that. like my thumb caught in the little gears, and I was squirting blood everywhere.
Yeah, like, to live a whole year with hemophilia, like,
yeah.
It's going to need to be enough money for me to do everything that I want to do with the rest of my life in that year.
Yeah, what if they bring
you
back
don't want to do
there?
Anything in that year.
Obstacle course.
That's true. Damn it.
We're going to go hemophiliac skydiving.
When do I get paid? Is it like right before I get the hemophilia or do I get paid after the year?
You can get paid at the start of the year so you can spend the money at any protections you need. Your nice padded suit.
I've got to make up here on my like current conditions, that's going to be rough.
I'm gonna live my life like I'm in Final Destination for a year.
The thing about hemophilia, though, is like the big danger from it isn't from external cuts. Like if you cut
the ones that you can't see inside.
Right, like you could get a bruise and that could kill you because it's inside your skin and there's nothing you can really do about it. So that's where
or a really nasty internal hemorrhoid.
Right.
Oh god.
Or a cerebral hemorrhage.
Oh man.
He bled to death through his ass.
Poor boy. Well,
I'm going to go lower than I think Sean and Adam will.
That doesn't make you better than us, Andy.
I think I'll just go for $1 million.
Oh, that's too low, Andy.
Oh, man.
I was thinking $1 million.
On $1 million, I don't have to go outside anymore. I'm going to put some padding on the walls. I'm going to get my dog unsharpened.
Declaw.
Get my dog filed down. It's like, sorry, buddy. It's
like
with
$1 million, I can hire a chef that works somewhere else and brings me food on a Nerf plate.
He passes it through a slot.
Soft foods.
Yeah, say after blending it.
Oh, yeah. Like, what if you bite like a chip wrong and it like stabs you in the gums?
Yeah, I think with a little bit of pre-planning and some, you know, Google research, I could plan this year out to take it pretty soft and easy on myself. So yeah. I think I could be okay. So I would say
I think I'd get fed.
Yeah, yeah. But that's okay.
Well, I was gonna say like I think I might lose weight eating like nothing but baby food.
Yeah. I think I'd do it for $250,000. Like I just think that I could plan out this year and just like say, okay, self, for this year you don't get to leave this room, this nice padded, squishy room. You just have to stick it out. And then after the year is done, you get all the money you want.
Get one of them Nerf controllers on your Nerf television.
Sponsored by Nerf. I was gonna say $1 million. I think I'm gonna go with that.
Yeah.
Like it seems like something that, man, if I just like you bump your, you're like, oh, I bumped my hip on the table, I should probably have that checked or I'll die.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need enough money to live comfortably for a year, not that I don't have to leave my house, but also enough money that I can get to see a very nice doctor very quickly.
Well, good news is, as long as you guys all have pretty friendly blood types, blood transfusions are very helpful.
Yeah.
That's another thing. With $1 million, I can buy a fridge full of blood.
I can buy new blood.
I just buy a bath of blood and soak in it daily.
Provided I didn't have to do it this year, because I couldn't do it this year.
Yeah.
I think I would do it for $3 million.
Are you sure? $3 million sound pretty good for raising a baby.
I would bleed to death.
Yeah.
Immediately.
She's already set blood test in a couple weeks, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the stories I have. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and have a great day.
Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.
Ah, a bat.